This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, July 3rd, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, as many prepare, perhaps, for a 4th of July of fireworks in a field or a backyard barbecue, beware, the ticks are waiting. A new tick-borne illness has been discovered in the South. We'll have more and offer ways to protect yourself.
And the local band Kate Brothers readies to release a CD with recordings that are almost as old as I am. Plus, alliteration at its finest. Catfish, corn dogs, and cornhole. A summer fun event will take place soon in Northwest Arkansas.
But first, Arkansas took in just more than $5 billion in net available revenue for the fiscal year that ended Monday. Economist John Shelnut with the Department of Finance and Administration says that means there will be a surplus for lawmakers to use in the coming year for one-time expenses.
This is a new injection of $78.7 million of new surplus to go with the unobligated amounts that were already there. And when you add in interest to that existing surplus, it's on the order of $180 million.
Shelnut says that a few factors were the key to the generated surplus.
The surplus was partly attributable to lower than expected individual income tax refund claims during the year as part of that provision for that tax shift that occurred earlier. This alone added $34.6 million to the result.
Shelnut says net available revenue for the year that ended Monday totaled just over $5 billion. The report, released Wednesday, also shows lawmakers will have more than $174 million available for one-time uses in the coming year.
Fayetteville drivers heading north have easier access to I-49. The Fayetteville Flyover, a bridge connecting Highway 71B to the Fulbright Expressway, opened to traffic last night. City officials, members of the Arkansas congressional delegations, and others gathered on the new roadway to officially dedicate the span. Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan says the project came in under budget and reflects cooperation on local, state, and federal levels.
I want to thank the previous administrations and city council members who have served now and in the past who worked on this project and approved important aspects of this project to move it forward and to get it where it is today.
The flyover has been discussed as a way to eliminate traffic congestion and the need for U-turns along Highway 71B for 30 years. Steve Clark, the president and CEO of the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, says the opening of the flyover not only eases congestion, but opens up economic possibilities for the east side of the city.
If you look to your left, you're going to see a site just up the hill where we're going to dedicate and have a groundbreaking for a new business, which you've read about in the paper, called Whole Foods, on August the 13th at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they're coming because of this flyover. You will see two other businesses up there, and they're going to have a dedication that same day, and they came because of this flyover.
The flyover was constructed in less than 17 months after ground was officially broken in February 2013.
Plans for a new fire station in Rogers are moving forward after city aldermen recently approved a construction contract worth more than $2 million. Tom Jenkins, Rogers fire chief, says the station has been in the planning process for quite some time.
It replaces the oldest fire station in our inventory, which is Fire Station 2. It's currently located in the middle part of our city. When it was constructed in 1971 and 72, it was on the outskirts of the city, and now it happens to be very strategically located. However, if you think back to what fire departments looked like in the early 1970s, firefighters rode on the back of trucks. Ambulance service was still a very, very new thing to be integrated into the fire service. So the station is woefully undersized. And it's so strategically located that we really need that station to be, just critical importance, that it's appropriately sized, and then it's not oriented correctly.
Chief Jenkins says that the current Station 2 is located in a residential area, and to respond to any emergency calls, fire trucks have to travel along residential streets and turn onto the busy New Hope Road, which hurts the station's response time. But the chief says the new station will change that and more.
We are just moving the station about a block, and we're going to orient the station directly onto New Hope Road, and we think that'll save somewhere around 20 or 30 seconds from every response that station makes. And that's significant. When 390 seconds total response time is your goal, to be able to save 30 seconds off that time, that's a substantial percentage. And so that station will be two-story, very contemporary-looking fire station, and it'll immediately house a paramedic engine company, and we will likely locate an ambulance and maybe some specialized resources there in the future.
Chief Jenkins says the new station should take about a year to build and will be more than five times larger than the current station.
The Interstate 49 and Don Tyson Parkway interchange will open about a month ahead of schedule. According to the City of Springdale, the $23.7 million interchange will open following a ribbon-cutting Monday afternoon at 1:30.
Fayetteville City Attorney is announcing his intentions to run for re-election. Kit Williams has been City Attorney since being appointed to the job in 2001. He has been re-elected in 2002, 2006, and 2010.
21C Hotel in Bentonville has racked up another honor. The hotel was included on Travel and Leisure magazine's list of top large city hotels in the United States. 21C made its debut at 31 on the list among bedfellows such as the Trump International Hotel in Chicago, the Carlisle in New York, and the Hotel Vital in San Francisco.
Next week's study session for the Fort Smith Board of Directors will be at an irregular time. The meeting will be held at 6 p.m. Tuesday at the Fort Smith Senior Activity Center on Cavanaugh Road. The session has been moved to accommodate discussions regarding the Whirlpool TCE contamination in a neighborhood north of the former factory. As the meeting is scheduled for that evening, there will be no noon study session on that day.
Forecast tonight calls for mostly clear skies with overnight lows from 56 in northwest Arkansas to 61 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Friday, and the 4th of July, mostly sunny with highs from 84 to 88. Tomorrow evening, partly cloudy with lows around 65. This is Ozarks at Large. The Oklahoma Department of Health has confirmed the state's first death due to Heartland virus, a new tick-borne illness discovered in the Mid-South. So far, no cases have been documented in Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich spoke with an Oklahoma epidemiologist to find out the status of the virus and how to avoid being bitten.
Nine cases of the Heartland virus, a tick-borne illness, had been documented first in 2009 in Missouri, and later in Tennessee, a 10th case was confirmed in Oklahoma. Becky Kaufman is an epidemiologist with the Oklahoma Department of Health.
This year, last month, in fact, in May, in Oklahoma, we learned of a positive lab result indicating Heartland virus through CDC testing. Right now, the only labs that can test for Heartland virus are the ones at the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, because they are doing a research project. It's not a finalized, approved test that can be used by commercial labs yet. So a healthcare provider had gone through the state health department and used the CDC to test the patient for Heartland virus, and it came up positive. So then we were notified, and we started further investigation at that point.
The Delaware County individual died. One other death has been reported. Becky Kaufman says only a certain kind of tick transmits this disease.
Amblyomma americanum. It's also called the easier name for that is the Lone Star tick. And this is still under investigation, but right now it's thought that it's probably the Lone Star tick that's carrying this. So some ticks are infected with it, and they can spread it to a human or an animal by taking a blood meal. When they take the blood meal, or which we generally call it a tick bite, but really it's they're consuming some of our blood. They also inject some of their saliva, and that saliva is what's contaminated with the virus. And in a matter of a few days, basically pretty much I think it's between 1 and 10 days, then if that tick had Heartland virus, then that person would start to have symptoms.
Female Lone Star ticks have white spots in the middle of their backs. The males do not. Lone Star ticks may also transmit southern tick-associated rash illness, Starry, Ehrlichiosis, and tularemia. The American dog tick is the primary carrier of Rocky Mountain spotted fever. The Heartland virus made big news after it was first identified in Missouri in 2009, after two farmers landed in the hospital with a mysterious illness, suffering from terrible fever, fatigue, headache, and nausea.
Just like most of the tick-borne infections, they all involve having a fever. And then in this case, this not so much a rash like we would see with other tick-borne illnesses, but feeling extremely tired, having a headache, having muscle aches, kind of like what we call flu-like symptoms where you're just achy all over. Those are the types of things, loss of appetite sometimes, sometimes problems with bruising easily. Not everybody's the same. And then, again, I just want to say when our Oklahoma case was identified, it was just the 10th case in the nation that had been confirmed. So we're still learning about this virus, but this is what we know from the first 10 cases about symptoms.
Some tick-borne illnesses are bacterial, so can be treated with antibiotics, but no vaccines or medications yet exist to prevent or treat Heartland virus.
For an antibiotic that's specific to that type of bacteria, for a viral infection, if you have the flu, there are antiviral medications specific to the flu, but in most cases for viral infections, there are not treatments and certainly not antibiotics. Antibiotics don't work.
Some infected tick bites may leave a telltale rash. The tick carrying the Heartland virus does not.
I wish it were that easy, but unfortunately that's not the case. It's going to look like any other tick bite.
To prevent being bitten, use insect repellents containing DEET or a picaridin, spraying your socks and boots especially, and if possible, wear long pants tucked into your boots.
But the probably most important thing besides doing all of those is to check yourself for ticks daily when you've been outside. And if you have been out in the morning and you weren't going to go back out again the rest of the day, then just go ahead and check yourself then. You know, the sooner the better, and especially ticks like to burrow, you know, along your waistband or in your groin or in your armpit. They like, you know, tight skin folds or places where your clothes are tight to you. So just check all over, maybe get somebody to help you check, use a mirror, you know, look on your back. And then when you find a tick, don't do that thing of touching it with a lip match or that you just blew out or with a fingernail polish remover or anything like that, because what that does is it makes the tick regurgitate, expel the saliva that has the germs in it into your system, and you want that not to happen. So just get some tweezers, get down as close to your skin as you can to grab the tick's head and just pull it straight out at the angle that the tick is in your body.
If you remove a tick within a few hours of latching, chances of getting sick are greatly reduced, experts say. If you must venture into the woods or meadows, you risk becoming a tick host. This time of year, seed ticks are out. These tiny hatchlings tend to hang out in gangs, swarming up your arms and legs, impossible to remove individually. So the best way to deal with that? Duct tape. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
You've probably heard of Bago, but what about the game of cornhole? And just how do you win?
You know, I've found over my years of playing cornhole that really it's the stance. Actually, we were playing just last week, just practicing at our office, and found out that the way I stand when I'm releasing the bag is very important because I can ring it all day long if I'm standing right.
We'll have more about a cornhole tournament taking place next week to benefit the Kendrick Fincher Foundation ahead on Ozarks at Large. Another secret? There will also be catfish and corn dogs.
We're living at a special moment in the history of classical music. There has never been a time with so many supremely talented young players. We'll continue our celebration of the great year we've had with PT Young Artists. Violinist Bosun Mo plays Tsigane by Maurice Ravel, coming up on Thursday's Performance Today from APM.
That's coming up from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on KUAF Public Radio.
Yeah! Good afternoon! Welcome, everybody. As you can tell, the mayor's a little excited today.
That's Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan yesterday, unapologetically happy for a ribbon cutting for a stretch of new roadway called the Fayetteville Flyover. Maybe it's a Northwest Arkansas thing. Certainly it's a Fayetteville thing. People are overjoyed at the opening of the Fayetteville Flyover. To somebody who hasn't waited for three or more cycles of green lights on College Avenue to make a U-turn to gain access to the Fulbright Expressway or I-49, the just-opened-for-business flyover could look like just a bridge. The easier connection has been discussed for at least 30 years. Over time, it became the transportation equivalent of a unicorn or Bigfoot, mentioned but not considered a real possibility. There was a joke. How far is it from College Avenue to the Fulbright Expressway? 2 minutes on foot, 20 minutes on wheels. Mayor Jordan says as of about 6 o'clock last night, that joke can be put to rest.
It reverses that. But it's a great day, and I want to give credit to the congressional delegation, or federal congressional delegation that provided funding. And I want to thank the people of this city, because they've had faith that this was going to be done, and they pulled in behind us. They passed the bond issue. They helped provide the funding, and it was all of us working together that made this happen. No one individual made it happen, but it was all of us together, and together we always make it better.
Two themes among the speakers yesterday. The construction was a cooperative effort, and business will grow on the east side of town because of the flyover. To prove the former, Arkansas Senator Mark Pryor, a Democrat, asked Senator John Bozeman and Congressman Steve Womack, both Republicans, to stand with him at the microphone last night.
Y'all come on up here. This is an example of how if we work together, we can get a lot of great things done. This is a Democratic and Republican. It's a federal, state, local cooperative effort, and we need to recognize that and honor that.
As for the anticipated economic impact, Steve Clark, the president and CEO of the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, cited the recent news that a Whole Foods would be built nearby. He says that decision was a direct result of the flyover being able to whisk cars past a busy intersection. He says at least two other businesses have cited the flyover as a reason to locate nearby. And he says the opening of the flyover is one cog in a series of infrastructure improvements.
And if you will look just below the highway there in between, you will see trails that have come, including the new trail, which is over here by Lake Fayetteville, which was a part of the dedication of the ribbons of commerce that link our city and all the other cities in Northwest Arkansas. So there has been faith, and there have been a lot of works.
If businesses are coming, there is something going. The confusion over how to get you and your car from the northbound lanes of College Avenue to the interstate. Dick Trammell, a state highway commissioner, says he's lived in Northwest Arkansas since the mid-1950s, and he will not miss the quirky way motorists had to navigate around the intersection.
I've been a Razorback cheerleader since 1957. I'm a cheerleader for Northwest. I'm a cheerleader for Arkansas. And I want to say thank you for that opportunity, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to say thanks for being here and for this new road, because I won't have to make U-turns anymore. Thank you.
Congressman Steve Womack says he can appreciate what an addition like the flyover can mean for a city. He was mayor of Rogers for more than 12 years.
A lot of times they take too long because there's a lot of things that go into a major road project, utility relocations, getting the right-of-way, getting the financing package, getting the contracts, supervising the contracts, letting the contracts. Everything is can be very complicated. But there's nothing like a day like today when you can look back over time and see all of the pain and suffering that went into getting to this point, and then actually seeing your work completed, cutting the ribbon and opening it up. It'll never be the same.
When it was announced the city would have a ribbon cutting and invite dignitaries to participate, there were some snarky comments on social media that the celebration was simply too much hubbub over what essentially is a bridge taking people from one place to another over a short distance. Senator John Bozeman, who's lived in Northwest Arkansas for decades, says maybe everybody doesn't understand the glee surrounding last night's opening, but he says the celebration is not misplaced.
You know, so much of Arkansas comes to the University of Arkansas or comes to Northwest Arkansas now for some reason or another. And so, you know, I know that the frustration level for them has got to just be tremendous because it takes a while to figure it out. But I've sat there and figured, you know, said, do I need to turn right? You know, would it be quicker that way? Do I need to turn left and turn around in the parking lot, you know, and come back? So this really will create a lot of economic opportunity in the sense that with all of that hassle, people just don't want to fiddle with it.
As of just a few minutes before 6 last night, cars were using the Fayetteville flyover, and the confusion at what a journalist once wrote was the morass called Joyce in College has now been diminished. This is Ozarks at Large.
Next time on Ask Me Another, we put actor Justin Long to work in a game called Just-in-Time Impressions.
Marvin, you gotta play. See, that's where they kiss for the first time on the dance floor. And if there's no music, they can't dance. If they can't dance, they can't kiss. If they can't kiss, they can't fall in love. And I'm history.
Start up your flux capacitor with me, Ophira Eisenberg, for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia.
You can hear Ask Me Another Saturday mornings at 10 on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. You may think you own all the music the Cate Brothers Band has recorded and released. Ernie and Earl Cate are legends here. The twin brothers played music together in high school around Northwest Arkansas, achieved national prominence with their top 40 hit Union Man. It hit number 24 on the Billboard charts in 1976. The Cates appeared on Austin City Limits and American Bandstand. They toured with Rick Danko, Levon Helm, and others as a reunited version of the band. You may know all of that. But did you know there is a new addition for your Cates collection? Music recorded in 1982 when the Cates were between record contracts.
I know that woman, she looks so fine. But let me tell you, it's a waste of time. She may look just like a perfect lover. Can't judge a book by looking at the cover.
That song, titled Don't Need a Woman Like That, was recorded by the Cate Brothers Band in Malibu, California, at the influential Shangri-La Studios. That studio has been the recording home for Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, Van Morrison, recently Adele. On this 1982 recording, the slide guitar, played by Bonnie Raitt. The session was the idea of Randy Stratton, himself a Northwest Arkansas guy who had moved to California in the early 80s to get closer to the record industry. He encouraged his friends to head west to record a demo that would be an effort to get a new contract for the Cate Brothers Band. This, however, was at the height of the disco era, and straight-ahead rock and roll was a hard sell. Bonnie Raitt, hard as this is to believe now, was also about to be dropped from her label. So, over the past 32 years, those four songs recorded in California have faded into obscurity. Except Randy Stratton all these years kept the cassette recording, and now the music is available to the public. This week, Randy Stratton and Earl Cate came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about the recording, the history of music in Northwest Arkansas, and their friendship. I asked them how long they've known each other.
For a long time. I met, of course, Earl. The guys through my dad, who was running the rink and stuff back
the
then.
In the early 60s.
Yeah. Just as I grew older and stuff, I started getting into music and all the good bands coming out the rink and stuff. Of course, the Rockwood Club before that. But when I, you know, as I got older, I started really knowing kind of more what the heck I was liking it, why I was liking it. You know, because the Cates were always right there doing their thing, and I was always impressed with the fact that they, you know, were able to get the following with their own music. I mean, they played some good covers and stuff too, but you know, they had their own thing going. I think Metro Media
That was the first label, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the first things that caught my attention with their recording accomplishments. And so it just got to be friends over the years, and I kind of wanted to get involved somehow in bookings, trying to help out where I could. They already had their network of place to play, so I found it as my job to go out and try to find other places out there to you know, some new fan base, whatever.
New venues.
Yeah.
So you knew each other here in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah.
In the early 60s, but this, I don't know if I call it this new EP, this just released, this just finally released CD, this is when you were all in California together, right?
Yeah.
Some 20 years later.
Well, actually, I moved out there, set up my operations out there so I could be close to the record business. They still lived here. They had already been out there previous years to record their projects they had with Electrocytum and stuff, but I decided to get out there and see if I could get in the middle of trying to help, you know, secure some recording contracts, go in that little area. I'd always promoted concerts and booked entertainment and ran the rink there with my family. But so I went out there to try to get something started, and that's where when Larry Samuels and Rob Fraboni were running the Shangri-La Studios, they were really interested in getting them out to try to do some of the list of tape of some of their
some demos.
Latest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they worked out a deal. Rob Fraboni got a hold of Earl and Ernie and worked out a situation where they'd come out there for about a month to play or to record.
And play, so.
Yeah, I booked them some weekend jobs there while they were playing on Friday and Saturday. They'd go play these dates just to kind of supplement the cost of the trip, you know. And that worked out good, too. They had a couple good rooms to play. We'd rotate them Fridays and Saturdays, and then they'd be in the studio in Monday to
it was kind of in a lull period there. We'd been playing where we still were with Lebon Helm, you know, we were touring with him a lot, but we didn't have a record deal at the time, so we had some time off there in the summer, so we ran out there, gave it a shot. Shangri-La is a pretty famous studio. Anyway, it went well. It's just that was kind of the disco peak of the disco era, and it was hard to get a deal. I mean, Bonnie Raitt, you know, who played on the tune, she was having trouble at the time too, I think, with, you know, record companies. They were giving her one more chance. Proved them wrong eventually. But
did you know what songs you were going to record when you headed that way?
Pretty much. We had five or six. We just did four on this, but we never anticipated this coming out. But Randy found the cassette, you know. We didn't have the masters, so it sounded pretty good. So I mean, of course, it was done analog originally, and Rob was a great engineer, so he said, "Why don't we just put it on CD? Because nobody's heard, you know, that stuff." There's one song I think we had recut on another CD, but other than that, it's stuff people haven't heard, you know.
So you found the cassette?
Yeah, I had my cassette. I'd held on to mine because it was something I really cherished. You know, they've done so much music themselves, and had so much going on somewhere along the line. Didn't have theirs available at the time, but I had mine to go to Darren Novotny, a friend of ours up in Springdale. And of course, everything had gone digital by that after all these years. So I took it to him and said, "Is there any way you can clean this up or see what we can get out of this?" Of course, it was mind-boggling what he was able to do. I mean, Darren's talented at that anyway, but it really kind of blew me away.
Well, I mean, a cassette, there's always the chance the cassette is... Mm-hmm. You know, cassettes were not the most durable.
Oh, no. I mean, the possibility of it even being still listenable is kind of...
Yeah. In fact, the last song, there's this wobble.
There's a little bit of tape warble on the last tune, but it's not bad, you know.
Yeah.
But that was kind of a peak of the analog, you know, before everything went digital. And in fact, when we were in Miami, when we did our last CD for Atlantic, they were experimenting with digital, and some of the, like Tommy Dowd produced the record, and they were talking about, "Well, what do you think of digital?" I said, "Well, I don't know. It's kind of a bionic hole there. It's not the same. It doesn't have that warmth or presence that analog has," which is true. Anyway, I remember that situation, the kind of monitors they used back then, you know, when we did some of the mastering and the mixing in the studio where Fleetwood Mac and did their stuff, and it's like you could hear that. Well, that's what that sound, why it sounds like that. You know what I mean?
That signature sort of sound for a studio,
especially in California. You know.
Was that on Atlantic, right? The one with Dowd?
Yeah, Tommy Dowd produced the one on Atlantic. Yeah. The other three were with Electra.
Electra Asylum, yeah.
Which, I mean, there are going to be some young people listening to this conversation. Electra Asylum was huge.
Oh,
Jackson
yeah.
Brown and I think
Eagles.
Linda Ronstadt. Yeah. Eagles, yeah.
Yeah, it was a hot
Joni
label.
Joni Mitchell.
It was a hot label.
Queen.
That's right. That's right. They were.
We toured with them.
Those guys.
You toured with Queen? I did
yeah.
not know that.
You know, when, see, the album came out in 75 and in November, so there wasn't much time left in that year. So it came the first of the year in 76. The record company said, we need to put you guys on tour to promote your album. But there was nobody that compatible that was going out in January except Queen, Night at the Opera. So they put us on tour with them. We started on the East Coast, and we actually played all the way to California on their tour. And it wasn't a great combination style-wise, but it worked out great because every time we go to a new town, the first place we go is a radio station. And, you know, they'd play our record and interview us, so we got a lot of boost from that. And I think that's what broke the record.
What I love about this, hold on, there's a saxophonist.
Yeah.
Whose name has kind of evaporated.
Who it was.
It's embarrassing. The guy was a great I know his first name was Tommy. And I know that he did some fill-in for Mick Gillette with Tower of Power when he wasn't touring. I remember those parts, but...
Yeah, I can't remember.
And he did his little part and left, and as years went on, I just kind of, the name faded for as far as the last name. I had no, looked for all my notes, trying to find... What was that guy's name? So I even contacted Bonnie, Kathy Kane, her manager, and tried to get word to Fraboni, and we never got any word back on who it was, you know. Nobody.
They probably didn't remember.
Yeah, they probably got 32 years, you know, lots of memories are lost.
Right.
That was a long time.
So we just kind of put down studio session guy, whatever we put.
July Friday in Bentonville.
Yeah, that's right.
You're going to be playing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Downtown Bentonville.
Yeah.
That's a pretty nice thing. Earl and them played it last year, and they had a good crowd. I mean, I don't know how it'll be. It would be in the fourth. A lot of people might be going to fireworks and stuff, but I think it'll
hopefully, yeah, they'll hang around for the music and then head on over. I'm sure they'll give them a little break. Knowing that's going on, they'll give a little break for people to be able to get over to the firework area to do that. Sure, they'll have a little pause there to do that. So,
I want to ask you, I mentioned younger listeners. There was a time when labels were supreme, and you knew which artist was on, whether you were a DJ, a musician, or just someone who bought records.
That's right.
You knew who James Taylor was on. You
that's
knew
right.
who.
Yeah.
And that's completely.
It's pretty much gone.
Yeah. It is. It's. I can tell you some are starting their own. Or it's got so big. Some are starting their own label. I think Bonnie's got her own, doesn't she?
Yeah.
She's kind of like what Madonna did her own thing too. And, yes.
Plus the fact we all know that because of the digital technology, you don't have to rent the $200 an hour studios anymore. Kids do their stuff at home on the computer and.
Yeah.
And then just throw it out there.
Oh yeah, throw it out on YouTube. Yep.
Finally, I'm too young to remember the Rock House.
Rockwood?
Rockwood,
okay. Because I didn't get to Fayetteville till 1981. Mm-hmm. What was that like inside? I know what it looks like on the outside. What was it?
It was concrete floor.
Yeah,
and
a couple
two,
levels.
It's kind of split level. There
yeah.
was a steakhouse on the left side.
Yeah, people don't know that was Faye Jones' first project.
Yeah.
He did that while he was in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. He used to go down there on the weekends and collect his fee. But yeah, that adds a lot of people don't know
we
that.
When my brother and I were in high school, we'd go down there like and drive behind it because we weren't old enough to get in or anything and listen to music. You may hear like Jerry Lee Lewis or somebody like that playing. And of course the Ronnie Hawkins, he bought in, him and Donnie Stone bought the club. And so he'd bring the band down about every 3 or 4 months and stay a couple of weeks or sometimes stay longer than that. But.
Yeah, he put my dad in charge of handling the bookings and the schedule everything in. And, you know, of course, Roy Orbison. So you get some pretty good people that were just up and coming. Of course, I was real young then, but I remember coming by to get paid every Sunday at our house. Who are these cool guys? You know, I was thinking to myself.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I remember first we got out of high school. We played there. I think it was that summer we got out of school. We played at the Rockwood and never played in a club where they had beer, you know. I said, yeah. Well, this place smells bad. But it ended up, you know, when Ronnie come to town, he'd always bring his guys down and say, I want you to hear these twins, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Ronnie would – well, he'd audition, didn't he? The story is, anyway, my dad, I heard from him, too, he'd audition people to come in. So a lot of these Tulsa guys would come in. Leon Russell, the story has it, came over to audition, and, of course, he went by
Russell Bridges
then, like Conway Twitty, who played there often with Harold Jenkins and the Rockhouses. But the word has it that Hawkins told, you know, listening to a little bit of Leon stuff, said, get off the stage, Bridges, you're not worth a beep. So he didn't pass muster for the audition. At least that's what the story, how the story goes. I thought
things worked out.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, he was only like, I guess, 15 or somewhere in that range back then. But
I know Levon and Robbie took Ernie and I or met us down at the Deluxe and sat down and talked to us. They wanted to hire me to play bass and Ernie to play keyboard because they were having trouble. They were changing bass players and whatever. But we didn't want to do it. We were just like 18 or 19 years old.
Earl Cate and Randy Stratton talked to me earlier this week about Robbie Robertson, Ronnie Hawkins, and the still-standing Rockwood Club that's in South Fayetteville, as well as the finally released 4-song Cate Brothers Band CD called The Malibu Sessions. Those songs were recorded in 1982 and have remained unreleased until now. You can find the CDs at any live show of the Cates or Earl and Them, and soon the music will be available at retailers like Sound Warehouse in Fayetteville and online at services like CDBaby.com and iTunes. And by the way, the Cate Brothers Band will perform at 6:30 tomorrow night in downtown Bentonville as part of the First Friday celebration in Bentonville. This is Ozarks at Large. I said I can't keep up. No, I can't keep up. It is Thursday, July 3rd, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I love fireworks, but not the kind the neighbors set off.
You like the big ones, the shows.
I want the show.
Me too.
And there's a bunch of them in Northwest Arkansas. Here's a little quick look. And tomorrow in What's Up, we'll have a list of things remaining. So,
and should remind people, if when they hear you say What's Up, that's the supplement you can find Friday in the newspaper.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are at home.
Yes.
There's a game tonight and post-game fireworks.
Which are great.
They are. I was driving by a couple of weeks ago, and my husband was driving, and I just kept craning my neck and craning my neck. They're good. Yeah.
I swear mm-hmm. I heard them in Bella Vista. Is that possible?
Maybe. I thought I heard them when I got home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a game tomorrow night, again at 7:05, and the post-game fireworks spectacular. I don't know how that's better than the usual ones. And then a game Saturday, again with fireworks, all at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Freedom Fireworks with music by Boom Kinetic tonight at the Northwest Arkansas Mall in Fayetteville. Fireworks celebration with Watermelon at the Rogers High School Football Stadium.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And fireworks with music starting at 7 at Loch Lomond Dam in Bella Vista.
All right.
Tomorrow, there's Patriot Parade in Bella Vista at 10:30. Freedom Fest at the Means-Wilkinson Community Center in Greenwood. The Mayor's 4th of July celebration at Harry E. Kelly Park in downtown Fort Smith. Freedom Fest at City Park in Gentry. Fire in the Sky at the First National Bank Soccer Complex in Harrison. An evening at Orchards Park with music by Breaking Silence. at Orchards Park in Bentonville. Fireworks at 8. This is the cool one I'd love to go to. The one at Ventress Trails and Resort on Beaver Lake. Mm-hmm. You have to go out on a boat to see them. Mile marker 8 if you're looking for them. And fireworks starting at dusk at the Van Buren Field of Dreams.
All right.
Lots of options.
Yeah.
Becca Martin-Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Tune in for Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence.
Coming up, what is love?
Is love a special feeling tied for unfathomable reasons to a particular other?
Or is love a complicated belief about the special attributes of that particular other?
Or is love an illusion wherein the shortcomings of a particular other are hidden behind the mist of lust?
What is love? Next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, Friday evening at 6 on KUAF 3.
Over the course of a year, hundreds, if not thousands, of nonprofit agencies in our listening area host events to help raise money for a good cause. In the fall, winter, and spring, many of the fundraisers are in the form of a gala or a night centered around a special speaker or event. But in the summer, a much more relaxed atmosphere is dominant. In a moment, the first fundraiser we can remember that has the word corn dog in the title. One of the co-chairs of the Catfish, Corn Dogs, and Cornhole Tournament to benefit the Kendrick Fincher Hydration for Life nonprofit corporation will join us in the studio. First, some other summertime events worth noting.
The Elizabeth Richardson Foundation will use the beach as a theme for their Beach Bingo Bash July 11th. There will be bingo, of course, but also beach-themed food and tropical drinks. The event is at the York Bowl on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Proceeds will help the Elizabeth Richardson Center purchase multisensory therapy equipment for children on the autism spectrum who use the center. More information available at ercinc.org.
July 18th and 19th, you can dress any way you want to help stuff the bus. The annual drive for school supplies is a combined effort by the United Way of Northwest Arkansas, Coca-Cola, and Walmart. There will be actual buses in Walmart stores in 7 area cities, including Jane, Missouri, on the 18th and the 19th. Most needed supplies include backpacks, loose leaf paper, 3-ring binders, folders, and highlighters. All of the supplies go directly to local school districts. You can find out more at unitedwaynwa.org.
The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks keeps the summer theme going with their annual Firefly Fling at the garden. Organizers promise between 6 and 10 p.m. on Sunday night, July 19th, there will be time to play, to create, to dance, and just generally enjoy fireflies. There will also be performances that include glowing hula hoops and black lights. Food and drink will be available as well. Adult tickets are $8. Tickets for children 3 to 13, $4. More information at bgozarks.org.
The Children's Safety Center will have a gala this month that will allow you to break out your black and white cocktail clothes. The gala is at the Fayetteville Town Center Saturday, July 19th at 7 p.m. And though the word gala is associated with the event, it sounds as though it will be a fairly relaxed time. Music will be provided by Boom Kinetic and Barrett Baber. There will be a wine pull and beer from Core Brewery in Springdale and a signature cocktail created for the event by The Hive at 21C Hotel in Bentonville. Tickets and information at childrenssafetycenter.org.
Big Brothers Big Sisters Northwest Arkansas use July for their Bowl for Kids' Sake fundraising. They say if you can spare a few minutes at the bowling alley, you can strike up a good time and support the work of Big Brothers Big Sisters Northwest Arkansas. Learn more at the agency's website, bbsnwa.org.
And if you like your fundraisers to be mobile, the dinner train from Fort Smith to Winslow will provide a dinner and a train ride from the Trolley Museum in downtown Fort Smith to Winslow on Saturday, July 26th. You can select the sit-down 4-course meal in the fanciest cars or a box dinner of fried chicken for the other cars. Departure is set for 5 p.m. that evening, and the proceeds benefit the Trolley Museum. To get all the details, go to FSTM, think Fort Smith Trolley Museum.
And now about the Catfish, Corn Dogs, and Cornhole Tournament that takes place July 11th. This event will raise money for the Kendrick Fincher Hydration for Life organization. Those first two words, you know, great summertime eating with catfish and corn dogs. The third, cornhole, refers to a decades-old game involving a filled bag thrown at a hole in a board. Many of us who grew up in Arkansas might call it baggo. That's because baggo, a trademark term, was invented in Hot Springs. Cornhole is similar, and it developed in the upper Midwest as a way to pass time with bags filled with corn kernels. You still see variations of these at tailgate parties and campgrounds. The object of the game is simple. Get the object into the hole that's cut into the wooden board. The minds at two area marketing companies, White Spider and Collective Bias, came up with the tournament idea as a fundraiser last year. Then they called it Bago and Briskets. Yesterday, Eric Howerton with White Spider came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk to me about the July 11th event.
So it was between White Spider and Collective Bias. We came together. You know, we're both marketing agencies, so we're expected to come up with some pretty neat titles. And so we wanted to have an alliteration. So Bago and Brisket was our benefit last year, and we wanted to kind of have another alliteration as well. People really enjoyed that event, so we came up. It's actually supposed to be crawfish, catfish, and cornhole originally, but we had to change it because the crawfish season wasn't so well.
Exactly. So this is a tournament. This is you pay your entry fee, and then if you proceed and win, you take home the boards.
Yeah, you actually do. So we're expecting probably about 50 different teams, and each team composes of a two-person team. And the first place prize is $500 cash with a cornhole board and T-shirts and some other gifts. Second place is $250 cash, cornhole board, and a couple other gifts. And then we have a third place prize as well of $100 cash.
You can walk away with a profit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, even if you get third place, you're profitable.
Because it's, what, $50 to get in for a team?
That's correct.
Is this brackets? Will this look like March Madness? How does this set up?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's brackets in there. We might even have a loser's bracket, too, just so people can keep playing cornhole.
Okay, are you? Would we call you an expert at cornhole? Are you a pretty good player?
I'm pretty awesome at cornhole, yeah, okay. I have to say, yeah.
So you're 27 feet away when you're throwing.
That's correct.
So what's the most important thing? You know, in golf, it's the legs, it's the elbows, keep the head down. In cornhole, what's the most important?
You know, I've found over my years of playing cornhole that really it's the stance. Actually we were playing just last week, just practicing at our office, and found out that the way I stand when I'm releasing the bag is very important because I can ring it all day long if I'm standing right.
What are the chances someone who's a complete novice, who maybe played washers, maybe plays a couple years, actually could go in and take first, second, or third? Can you have dumb luck?
You can, because last year we had during our Bag Old Brisket benefit, we had a couple of rookies that made it all the way up to third place and second place. You know, well, I don't want to say the second place team were rookies, but I mean they were. It was a blast. I mean, and we actually had a nun out there. You know, she's
a nun.
Yeah, we call her
playing.
Yeah, we call her Sister Margarita, and she's she was out there playing and playing Bago, and she did quite well too. She was schooling folks, you know. So people are pretty upset they're getting beat by none.
But you can't say anything.
No, absolutely not. You can't. You know, you're just laughing, having a good time. It's really just a fun, laid-back event. It's great for a hot summer's day. We're probably going to have some kiddie pools out there so people can relax. You know, Core Brewery will be right next door. It'll be a lot of good time.
It sounds like it's also a great spectator sport, that even if you don't want to participate, you can go out and just have fun watching.
Absolutely. And there will be door prizes there, too. You know, spectators can, you know, get a ticket, and we'll have a lot of gifts from local businesses, you know, with $20 or more value. And that's really where we're trying to raise our money for Kendrick, you know, with the board sponsorships, the tournament teams, the food, and the door prizes.
When will you, or whoever does it, when will the brackets actually be made? Because you don't know how many teams,
right,
as you and I are talking now.
Yeah, we go all the way up till like noon on the day of the tournament, which is July 11th, Friday, and where we'll be organizing the bracket all the way up until right before the game start.
This is one of those things that if you allow yourself, you can get really nerdy about the brackets and how it works. And
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the teams are having a blast by naming their, you know, giving their team names.
A lot of puns, a lot of...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like we, one of my favorites so far is Corn Thugs and Harmony, you know. It's pretty classic, pretty classic.
And again, it's for Kendrick Fincher Hydration, which educates young people, well, everybody, about the importance of hydrating while working out or exercising.
Right, absolutely. It's a preventable, you know, situation, and they've been around for a long time. It's a great organization. They have a lot of events that go on each year, and this is one that where White Spider and Collective Bias were hosting it. Kendrick Fincher is not really involved in it other than just coming out, playing cornhole, eating, drinking, having a good time. It's really good for them in that way, too.
The Olympics has an opening ceremony and a closing ceremony. There's an Olympic theme. Does catfish, corn dogs, and cornhole have an official theme?
You know, Johnny Bago from Bago and Brisket benefit we had last year may show up and sign some autographs and run out there. You know, he's a pretty serious guy. But other than that, you know, he may make the run in, but we'll have to see.
Okay. There's no lighting of a torch.
No lighting of a torch. You know, no burning of cornhole bags or anything like that. So,
very good. Thank you so much for your time.
You got it. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Eric Howerton works with the marketing agency White Spider and is co-chair for this year's Catfish, Corn Dogs, and Cornhole Tournament. The agency Collective Bias also helped develop the fundraiser. It takes place Friday, July 11th at the Collective Bias office in Rogers. That's just off the I-49 exit number 83 and is located in Rogers on Osage Drive. You can learn more about the event at where else? Catfish, Corn Dogs, and Cornhole.com.
The organization Nerdies just had two spots come available for their July 7th Mods for Minecraft session in Fayetteville, which was previously sold out. Rather than using the same old blocks and items, Mods for Minecraft will teach participants to change and add unique items. Programming mentor Justin will teach the steps it takes to let imaginations take form in the world of Minecraft. This camp is for ages 9 through 17 and will be held beginning Monday, July 7th and run through Friday from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Lunch will be provided and catered by a different local restaurant with snacks and drinks provided as well. Other open mods for Minecraft sessions begin August 4th and August 11th. Nerdies also offers camps in videography, robotics, arts, improv, and droids and drones. For more information, nerdies.me.
Have you ever experienced this phenomenon that is Minecraft?
I've tried to play with my stepson once.
I've watched as younger people, you know, 8, 9, have explained it to me. It's like watching paint dry. I don't get it.
I'm a fan of the video game because, you know, they're building and learning creating.
It's the 4th of July is just about to hit us, of course, so fireworks are legal within Fayetteville. They're not legal in some other places. If you're not sure, check with your local city government or police agency. Mm-hmm. Here are some tips for safer fireworks use if you feel compelled to blow things up. First of all, provide an open area, no overhang of foliage. Don't want to catch the leaves on fire. Minimum of 50 feet clearance. Make sure you have a working fire extinguisher and water hose nearby. Don't use the item if it's been damaged or has been wet.
Okay.
All right?
Don't try it.
Don't wear loose clothing. This seems so obvious. Don't wear open-toed shoes and use the fireworks only as intended. Don't try to alter them or combine them. All of that makes great sense to me.
Twisting fuses, don't do that.
No.
Okay.
Just be careful.
Well, I think I'll just be observing this year.
That's all I ever do.
Yeah. Well, it'll be fun, though.
Err on the side of caution. Yeah. That's my advice.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnap.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Vesta.
Vesta?
Vesta. It is just east of Fort Smith, just over the Sebastian County line into Franklin County. So it's in Franklin County.
Okay. Well, happy Independence Day weekend to Vesta.
Yes. And tomorrow we'll have a best of kind of music show for Ozarks at Large.
Right. What we've done since we've gone to a daily show is the 4th of July weekend, we play back some of the songs that we've had performed inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio over the previous 6 months.
All right. So we look forward to that.
Yes.
Okay. End with just a little bit of music from Jesse Dean and Left of Center. He'll be performing tomorrow evening at George's in the Garden beginning at 6:30. Thanks so much for listening and have a happy 4th. But I know one thing for sure, I ain't catching any fish. Dug somewhere